2SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
G'day, g'day. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of Sydney arts and culture on 2SER 107.3 FM. Hope you're keeping warm on this windy and grey Saturday morning. And no, I'm not Nicole Beck. She's away for the next couple of weeks in the United States, just living it up. So I'll be filling in. My name's Amelia Navasquez. And this Saturday morning, we've got a killer lineup of stories that'll hopefully add a bit of spice to your weekend. We've got interviews with gallery coordinators and for a lineup of a new coming experimental arts festival called Sedition. And later on in the show, we'll be hearing from one of our producers, Jess, who went out to Cascella Gallery in Rosebery and chatted with some artists premiering their works at the Nagaya exhibition. But before we crack into any of that, I'm going to kick off the show with a song. This is Your Girl with Skateboard, and you're listening to So Hot Right Now on 2SER 107.3.
Love me.
Constant Shapes right there with a track, I Can See the Air right there. And if you look up at the air today, you'll see it is absolutely revolting and gross and rainy. So I hope you're keeping warm and dry and having a cruisy Saturday morning. Right before that, you heard Your Girl with Skateboard. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture on 2SER 107.3 FM. I'm not Nicole Beck, your usual presenter. I'm actually filling in for Nicole Beck, and my name is Amelia Navasquez. And we're going to crack into some content now with some Sydney Fringe Festival coverage. And in this year's lineup, there is absolutely no shortage of comedy. Right now, we're going to hear from one of our producers, Zoe Cetas, who recently had a really fun chat with Jamal Abdul about his upcoming show at the Sydney Fringe Comedy Festival. This is Zoe.
My name is Zoe Cetas, and I'm joined in the studio right now by stand-up comedian Jamal Abdul.
Good morning, Zoe. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So you've got a show coming up at Sydney Fringe Comedy Festival. Do you want to tell me what it's about?
Yeah, sure. The show is called Some Jokes I Wrote. And I guess it's a very candid title for exactly what I did. So it's mostly, yeah, it's mostly just a show of basically all the jokes I've written up until this point. I kind of thought of like going with like an overarching theme, like a lot of comics do that. But this is my first hour and I just wanted to have fun and get laughs for the whole hour if I possibly can. So
yeah, just get all the jokes out there.
Yeah. I just wanted to treat it like a long sort of club set. That was my approach with this one.
What sort of things do you touch on in your show? You do have a very funny joke about being mixed race, Italian and Arabic.
Yep. Yeah. Lots of that stuff. So yeah, I guess, it's mostly like a lot of personal stuff, like a lot of stuff relating to my life. Specifically, majority of it is anyway. Yeah, so it's mostly just like I'll talk about like my mixed race upbringing. I'll talk about I'm visually impaired, so I talk about that in my act as well. Also just, you know, pick on old people. everyone gets a bit of a ribbing.
Yeah,
I kind of just like to keep it fun and just make it funny for everyone. Yeah.
Mm. Do you use the term WOG to describe yourself?
Sometimes it's kind of inevitable. You have to use that word.
Yeah.
Like there are just certain things that are just woggy and you're like, oh boy, like that's kind of, yeah. Like, all right, this is kind of embarrassing to admit. We don't have any bottle openers in our house at the moment. So I live with my Italian mom and my sisters, right? We all live, still living at home, crushing it. but we don't have any bottle openers. And the other day I had to open a bottle without any bottle openers in the house. And like my immediate thought was, oh, maybe like a garlic crusher would work. And in that given situation, that is a WOG thing to do, right? Like,
yeah,
to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that situation, yeah, that's a very WOG-y move, or if you just have like an exceptional amount of oregano in the house. You know, there are just certain things.
I totally agree. Yeah, whenever I go to my parents' house, my dad enforces herbs on me from the garden.
Yeah, totally. What's your nationality?
Greek. Cypriot Greek, yeah.
Right.
I used to use the word WOG all the time to describe myself and to describe my dad until one day an Anglo friend of mine used it in a derogatory sense.
Right.
And I just, ever since then, I just haven't really been able to use it in any sort of conversational way. I don't know. Do you feel the same?
Right. It's kind of a funny thing, huh? Like, I don't know. I'm not super defensive about the word being used, mostly because I didn't grow up in the 80s. So I didn't really get the front end of it. I did deal with, like, a lot of racism where I grew up. I grew up in a country town. And the term was used kind of pretty freely around there. But I don't know why. Like, it didn't bother me that much. Like, I kind of just kind of embraced it. Like, yeah, all right. My parents know how to cook. I'm a WOG. All right, whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't...
We use olive oil. Get over it.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. Sometimes you hear certain people say it and you're like, oh, that has a different tone.
Yeah, it's the tone, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah. I definitely know what you're talking about. Yeah. Mm. I don't know. Like, I don't use the word, like, I don't use it a lot. But yeah, just like I said, just sometimes it's there. Or like, sometimes it's like kind of like a positive thing. Like in Australia, like, we don't call it ethnic comedy, really. We call it WOG comedy. You know, like Nick Giannopoulos and all those dudes. You know, it's WOG comedy. That's what it is here. So
yeah, absolutely. What country town are you from?
So I grew up I grew up in Nowra.
In Nowra,
yeah,
great.
On the south coast of New South Wales, yeah.
And how did you find yourself in Wollongong?
Basically, after my parents got divorced, my sisters were going to school in Wollongong. So we just thought, oh, we'll just live there. It'll be more convenient. My mum had a job there. So yeah, we just moved up to Wollongong.
And so you started doing comedy down there?
Yeah, that's where I got my start. So I moved there. I didn't have like any friends around. All I had was like my direct family around. Yeah, just like an open mic night popped up and it kind of really demystified how comedy worked. You kind of see, yeah, when you go to an open mic night, you really realize what comedy looks like when you're starting out. And I kind of thought, oh, I'll give that a try, see what happens. No one knows me here, so if I suck, it's not like I have a whole bunch of friends that saw me bomb, you know what I mean? That was kind of my approach to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then later on in 2018, we did Raw Comedy together and you made it to the state finals.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. That was, I didn't think I would make it that far. And yeah, it was a really exciting experience to be doing the Comedy Store because I never did the Comedy Store up until that point. In fact, you get to experience like the Comedy Store, you know, like especially when you're an open micer in Sydney, like you're playing in like you're standing on like a shoebox in the corner of a pub a lot of the time, like
one's listening.
Yeah, it's just like yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've just got one last question for you. What advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh man, that's a tough one. That's like a job interview question, you know?
I know. I always like to end it on this question every time. People are like, oh, really?
I don't know. I would almost feel pompous having a good answer for that because I feel like I'm still young at 24. So I hope to look back at my 24-year-old self when I'm, you know, 30, and I'd like to think that I developed beyond that point. I don't know. What if my maturity just stopped right now?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You just stay a 24-year-old man the whole life.
Well, I guess there are a lot of comics like that, you know?
Oh, isn't that just comedy in itself?
Yeah.
We're all just big babies.
Oh, man. Advice I would give to my younger self. Well, what would I tell my younger self?
Well, what would you tell a younger comedian, kind of up-and-coming comedian?
Oh, man, that's even harder. If I had to give myself comedic advice, looking back on like when I first started, I would probably just, for me, it would be if something feels hacky, just don't say it. Like you just, if it feels hacky, like if it's a crappy pun, you know, just let it go, dude. Like, you know, it's not funny sort of thing. Like, I think, yeah, for me personally, I used to have this joke. God, it's a terrible joke. But it was a pun and I thought it was so funny, but it's so dumb at the same time. I was describing a high school bully and I was picking on the fact that he was a much bigger dude than me. And I made the point that he was bigger than Kanye West's ego. And then I would put my hand out and I would go, you know, he was like yay big. So like, and it's like, it's a horrible pun. And it used to get laughs and like I did it for a really long time. And now I look back on that joke like, ah, you idiot. Yeah, let it go, dude. Like,
yeah, so true. Yeah, let it go. Don't force it.
Yeah, totally.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
No, thank you so much for having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
That was Zoe Seitas chatting with stand-up comedian Jamal Abdul about his upcoming show Jamal Got Jokes. Think about what type of advice I'd give to my younger self. I'd probably say don't go for the beef vindaloo because you'll definitely regret it later. You can catch Jamal's show at the Sydney Fringe Festival at the 21st and 22nd of September. And for tickets and more info, you can head to our website, 2ser.com/sohotrightnow, or check us out on Instagram. If you've just tuned in, though, you're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture on 2SER 107.3 FM. My name's Amelia Navasquez. I'm filling in for Nicole Beck for the next couple of weeks, and I'm going to play a few tracks, but please don't go anywhere, because right after a few songs, we're going to be talking about an upcoming exhibition currently showing at the National Art School, which is celebrating the streets of Darlinghurst, but in a way that you might not expect. But to get you there in the meantime, here's a bit of Pie Corner Audio with Hollow Earth. You're listening to So Hot Right Now on 2SER 107.3 FM. Thank you. Top, you heard there, Hollow Earth by Pie Corner Audio, and that was NRVS NRG with us, which is pretty fitting for our next story, which is all about counterculture and punky anti-establishment vibes cracking in Sydney, specifically in the 1970s. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture on 2SER 107.3 FM. My name's Amelia Navasquez, and I'm filling in for Nicole Beck for the next couple of weeks. And this, right now, we're about to talk about Paper Kites, which is a celebration of Sydney's dynamic poster art and public about poster art and public protest movements from the late 1960s, going all the way through to the 70s and 80s. Paper Kites is officially kicked off this week, and it's all kicking off at the National Art School as part of Sedition Festival. And earlier this week, I was lucky enough to chat with the festival founder, Lisa Bell Furhagen, and collaborator John Allen to find out more. You guys have been working with the National Art School in Darlinghurst to put together this awesome celebration of poster art with a specific focus on 1970s Sydney. So what can we expect to see?
Well, an embarrassment of riches. So we have the NAS exhibition, which opened last night and goes through till the 12th of October. Over 200 works from the long 70s in Sydney. And I think there have been other poster exhibitions, but the thing that is particularly seminal about our exhibition and the festival itself is that it is an acknowledgement of the whole creative upheaval at the time. So it takes in the artists who armed themselves with squeegees and not guns, the musicians who screamed their message, and the cabaret performers who also made their mark. Johnny Allen was a huge part of that time.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And so many movements that we take for granted today really kicked off in the 70s. The whole environment movement, the women's movement, the gay movement, so many things. Independent music, all trace their origins back to the 70s, which in a sense we're honouring with this exhibition and festival.
I mean, what we're doing is acknowledging the whole creative upheaval that happened at the time.
Absolutely. And thematically, the show seems to be engaging with heaps of various different forms of counterculture, as you say. So at that point in time in history, what kind of role did protest posters play in shaping things like activism and the arts, do you think?
They were right at the front of the barricades. The feminists and the anarchists were front and centre, first of all, at the barricades. They had the back of the gay community because the retribution and the punishment meted out by the status quo and the authorities back then was so threatening and so potentially, you know, you could die at their hands. And so the women and the anarchists were the first at the barricades, and so they had the gay community's back. And then after that, there was this groundswell, and then came the Mardi Gras.
And the posters were the means of communication, yeah. The internet of the day, really. You didn't have the luxury of the internet to communicate. So those days, you stuck a poster up on the wall.
So what did those types of posters look like? People would plaster them on the streets pretty much.
And they were designed to communicate, so they had to be strong and instant. If you're walking past or driving past, you had the attention for 10 seconds, so the poster had just to, bang, had to grab you. So that was the impetus with which they were designed, I think.
One of the most amazing things for me is that the issues that they engaged with are still as poignant today. So my favorite poster is, it's this beautiful magenta and it says, "Without trees we perish." So it's just extraordinary how current these posters and the issues that these brave people took on back in the 70s are as relevant now.
It's extraordinary and a bit depressing, really, to think that some of these issues are still big issues today. We were fighting them 40 years ago and we're still fighting them today.
And it seems super impressive as well that this is an archive of over 200 posters specifically focused from a very specific moment in time, which is innately activist-driven. Could you talk a little bit about the curation process and how that worked in developing this show?
Yeah, it's been a great process. So we've galvanised many artists and worked together with some extraordinary people. So originally Toby had the idea and then he got me into trouble again. And Johnny Allen, he got him into trouble as well. And Eamon Darcy, who's the exhibition designer. And the curatorial process, well, we actually, because institutions take a long time to agree to borrow works. So there have been some absolute Galahads in this process. So Mark Ledbury from the Power Institute, who was the first to get it, John Valance, who heads up the State Library of New South Wales, Stephen Alderton, the National Art School. And then Toby, Johnny and I got in the car and most of the works came from artists themselves, although Eric Ridler at the Art Gallery of New South Wales opened his drawers and gave us some of the most beautiful things from the ephemera collection. So I had been part of an ephemera symposium at the University of Sydney and we were able to actually borrow works from that component of institutions, which is easier than borrowing artworks per se. And those things have actually been extraordinary additions to the exhibition. But the artist, it's all about the artist.
Isn't it a strange thing that something like poster arts, which are something that are traditionally meant to be on the streets, are then taken and adopted by institutions? It feels quite disjointed.
That's kind of funny that you say that, because there's this great bit of graffiti that appeared on Waters Gallery. Posters are meant for factory walls, not gallery walls.
Yeah, it's super strange to me. I find it fascinating. Like the focus and the purpose of these posters is to galvanize it. It carries really strong messages, but it does seem a bit ironic at times.
They were never designed to be long-lasting. They were literally ephemera. And, you know, you stuck it up on the kitchen wall or whatever for a couple of days or a week and then wrapped up the garbage and threw it out. So some of us are quite amazed to see that, you know, 40 years on, these are now regarded as art and, of course, getting the sort of interest and prices that art does. But they were. They were the genuine art of the time.
Is there a story behind the name of the show, Paper Tigers?
Yes. Well, Paper Tigers, it's sort of a ironic name because Paper Tigers was a sort of conservative phrase, and so we're using it sort of ironically. But Sedition, the actual name of the whole festival, has its roots in the student riots that happened in Paris in the late 60s and then transferred to Camden in Britain with Jamie Reid and all the little shenanigans they got up to.
And I like Paper Tigers because it does kind of undercut the seriousness a little bit. As Liz Bell says, it's ironic.
It's innately playful, which I think is a really great message to carry across when it's undercut with some heavier themes. So overall, what kind of conversations are you trying to open up with this show? What would you like audiences to leave thinking about?
Well, we have actually a series of conversations that are taking place. We want people to engage with the issues that were relevant then and still are today. But I think it's interesting, social media, it's wonderful, but you're sort of speaking, you're in an echo chamber. So we want to get people to actually start engaging with issues like town planning. Where are all the spaces that artists can operate from because the developers have taken them all over? So we want to engage with those issues. It's amazing to me as a feminist that we're still talking about issues that relate to the colonization of women's bodies.
And I think also the notion that art inspires and creates action. I think one of the things that, you know, we're in a time where there's a right-wing ascendancy around the world, so I think it's a very good time to, if you like, gather the forces of progressive thinking, get across to younger people that there is a tradition here, which goes back not just to the 70s, but goes way back, and that they are part of a wider and a greater tradition. And I think that, that all comes out loud and clear in the exhibition.
That was Johnny Allen speaking about Paper Tigers at Sedition Festival, which kicked off last night at the National Arts School in Darlinghurst. Talking about getting your hands dirty, getting loud, and speaking out against that right-wing ascendancy through art. It's all going down until the 12th of October, and it is absolutely free, so go check it out. Go escape the rain. And if you want to find out more details about that, you can check it out online at 2scr.com/sohotrightnow. I hope you're having a great Saturday. No, I'm not Nicole Beck, your usual presenter. My name's Amelia Navasquez, and I'll be filling in for the next couple of weeks while Nicole is having a killer time in Vancouver. We're going to kick on now with some music, but please stick around because right around the corner when we get back, we're going to be hearing from one of our producers, Jess. Earlier this week, she went out to the Koskela Gallery in Rosebery and chatted with some artists premiering their works at the Nagaya exhibition. But until then, we're going to kick off some music with a bit of Rainbow Chan. This is Oblivion.
Share. If I could go back to a time before now, before I ever fell down, go back to a time when I was just a girl, when I had the
top there, you heard Rainbow Chan with Oblivion. The album was Pillar. And then you heard A Lot's Gonna Change by Ways Blood from their latest album, Titanic Rising, which I have been listening to so much lately. A bit emotional for a Saturday, maybe a bit grey. And I'm hoping the weather is gonna change just like that song so we can all get out and about on this cloudy Saturday morning. But maybe you want to stay dry, maybe you want to stay warm and go check out some galleries. We've just been talking about Paper Tigers, which is happening at National Art School. And Zoe Cetas, one of our producers, was talking to Jamal Abdul earlier about his upcoming show at the Sydney Fringe Festival, which is going from the 1st of September all the way through to the 30th. I'm not Nicole Beck, your usual presenter for So Hot Right Now. My name is Amelia Navasquez, and I'll be filling in for the next couple of weeks here on 2SER 107.3 FM. I hope you're having a killer Saturday. We're going to kick on with some more music, but please stick around because around the corner we'll be hearing from another one of our producers, Jess. who went out to Cascella Gallery in Rosebery and chatted with some artists premiering their works at the Nagaya exhibition. But until then, we're going to play Yellow, and this is from Rich Brian. Rich Brian right there with some very wise words. How do I disappear without anyone knowing? Literally me at every house party ever. Come on, guys. Social interactions are hard. But yeah, that was Rich Brian right there with Yellow. And if you've just tuned in, you've been listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture on 2SCR 107.3 FM. And no, I'm not your usual presenter, Nicole Beck. She's living it up on holidays at the moment in Vancouver. And my name is Amelia Navasquez, and I'll be filling in for the next couple of weeks. We're going to kick on with the content now, which brings us to Nagaya. It's a Daruj word, which means both, and it's also the title of an exhibition featuring at Kaskela Gallery in Rosebery. The exhibition is celebrating its 10th year collaboration with the design brand and its social impact projects with First Nations peoples. Our producer Jess headed to the launch to chat more about the collaboration with co-founder Sasha and artists Paula Savage and Auntie Ellen.
So thank you so much, Sasha, for speaking with us. I'd love for you to give us some context on this collaboration and what this big 10-year celebration is all about.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the program. So tonight we're launching six new collaborations with six different Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander art centres. We're doing that to celebrate 10 years of working on our impact projects, which have seen us working with 13 different communities, I think it's 23 different languages, with an idea of collaborating to create some design products together.
That's really great. And I've seen some of the designs. They're just absolutely beautiful. But could you maybe comment on how this collaboration has evolved over the last 10 years?
Sure. So it started off 10 years ago with Yutta Badiyala, which is a collaboration with Yolngu weavers from Elko Island. So that's sort of been our foundation partner and the one that I guess we've worked with the longest. Tiliwiru is next sort of cab off the rank, and that was with the Jumpy weavers. And then we've done a few different collaborations, not in lighting, but with fabrics and some other initiatives. And then we started working with Milingimbi, and then this time, or these collaborations now involve Jumpy weavers, both NPY and APY artists, Milingimbi, Moa, Bulla Bulla, Narangiri weavers from the Coorong, and also Durumu Arts in the Northern Territory. And what we've done with this, the launch of these ideas, is to create something that's unique to each particular community that is representative of their landscape or their cultural heritage or tells a particular story that's really relevant to them.
And I read in the release that many of these artists, they're some of the last people that actually practice these techniques and methods. Like, how did you find these people, and how are they trying to perpetuate that through their community and keep this practice alive?
I think a lot of them, I guess it varies a little bit from community to community. So with Junpi, they didn't actually have a big history of weaving, but it's definitely become something that's part of the Junpi weavers' lives. When we first started working with Elko Island Arts, it took about 3 years to get the first project off the ground. So a lot of that time was spent doing research, understanding what was actually involved in producing the fibre. So it's very labour intensive. It takes a long time. You have to go out in the bush collecting the materials, strip the pandanus of all its thorns, then you collect all of the roots and leaves and different things to make the dyes from, boil it all up, and then you start weaving. It really was a while to sort of understand as well whether what we were thinking of was culturally appropriate, whether there are any issues around that. And once, you can sort of pioneer things with one community, I think it becomes a little bit easier and people have a track record they can look on to say, oh, I know we've heard that things are good, that you're the trustworthy and honest, that you do things the right way, that you recognise the artist's copyright, you have proper legal agreements, you pay fairly. So all of those things are really important. I think then when you want to launch a new collaboration, people can see, like they've heard that things work well and that it's of benefit to the community and the artists, and we work in the right way. Because I think when we first started, you know, we were very wary and aware of the fact that there'd been a lot of instances of white people going into communities that either didn't have the funds to really back up a great idea, or they weren't actually very honest and ethical. And I think we wanted to make sure that that was absolutely at the forefront of what we did. And so a lot of our efforts initially were around sort of making sure that all of those process things were sorted out, and that we also built really great relationships with the artists. We have really long-standing friendships with those weavers.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, there's this whole, you know, legal, ethical, admin aspect that people probably don't see when they come to events like this. You know, they just see beautiful lighting structures on the wall. But How would you say this has impacted the lives of the artists that you've seen progress over the last couple of years?
Well, it definitely has from a financial perspective. So we have worked out that over the 10 years, we're launching our impact report shortly. We've returned over $780,000 into the artists or the art centres, and also into one Aboriginal-owned business. And so there's definitely been a financial impact. And then I think also sitting of equal importance is probably a cultural impact, in the sense that the artists have seen their work published. It's been exhibited in, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Japan, Milan. It's been published in all sorts of publications internationally and domestically. And I think for them, it's about being able to say, you know, what I do is valued, and to have some cultural recognition, I think, for their work, which is really important. You know, that's part of the impact story, I guess. Plus, I think we've been really lucky to see the interest of some of the younger weavers. So we've often had the daughters of some of our senior weavers involved in projects. In Warrakoona, we've got first-time weavers who were never, you know, that engaged with Junpei, getting engaged and working on this project and really enjoying it. And I think that's really exciting to see, that there's these new generations of weavers coming through and artists coming through.
Well, I'm very excited for tonight. So thank you for giving us that spiel, and all the best for the event.
Thank you so much.
So I've got Auntie Ellen here as well to tell me more about some of the works that she's got here at the Koskela collaboration. So thank you for joining us on the program. I'd love to know what you've got here at the exhibition, and what your creative process is like.
Hi Jess. We're honoured to be here today, and we've got to thank Stella for the invite and the project that they've given us. And so it's Noreen Catinieri, Bessie Rigney and myself, Ellen Trevara. We took on that project of weaving the framework of fish trap. This is what we call a fish trap. And fish traps are what our old people made back in the olden days. And here we are today doing fish traps on framework for lighting. And it's something different, very different.
And whereabouts are you from? Is fish trap something that's used heavily in your community?
The fish traps that we've been working with, but I'm a Ngarrindjeri, and so is Bessie and Noreen. We're Ngarrindjeri Mimanis, Ngarrindjeri women that have done the weaving for 37 years. I have them, and Noreen, and we've taught Bessie alongside of it, but we're from down the Coorong. In our boundaries, along the Coorong, the river and the lakes is our region for the Ngarrindjeri, and this is what we do. Our old people made all of these things with the weaving. But like we're saying today, it's different. We're working on the framework, and we're very happy and thankful that it all worked out.
And what's that? How has that impacted your life, you know, from weaving and then having it in this big space in Rosebery today?
Well, this is a big surprise for us, but like